Welcome to the podcast that is all about self-employment. We'll be sharing expertise on getting started, getting noticed, and getting it right, as well as dealing with getting it wrong. Your host, Julia Kermode, will help you get ahead so you get the success you deserve.
Hello, welcome to today's episode. I'm really excited that we're bringing a new take on these podcast episodes for you. So we're making them much shorter and punchier so it's easier for you to listen to as and when convenient. And starting this off today by looking at entrepreneurship and surviving the pandemic from a business perspective and coming back stronger. So I'm chatting today with David Barker, and in his own words, he's an accidental entrepreneur, although I actually think he's a serial entrepreneur, but that's splitting hairs really. But anyway, he was around at the start of the internet, and he set up his first business then as one of the UK's first ever digital marketing agencies. So have a listen to the interview and listen to how he's overcome the different challenges from the pandemic and how he has come back stronger. Really warm welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today, David.
Thanks for having me, Julia.
So if we just dive straight in, what was life like for you and your business before the pandemic hit?
Yeah, so before the pandemic, I was actually contracting with a startup business. I've been contracting there about 4.5 years. So I was actually brought in right at the start. So I helped create the ideas for the business. I was hired as the CEO to move it forwards. We took it through piloting, had £1 million investment to pilot the idea. Wow. Just for the pandemic, we were about to sign off a £5 million investment that would have then provided security for myself, but also for the business and the growth we'd need then to make it a real success. So that was, we were just about to sign off that investment just before the pandemic hit. And then the pandemic hit. And the negotiation with the investor then slowed to we need to pause the deal, assess COVID, but don't worry, it'll be fine, you know, but we're going to have to sign it off in the summer last year. And then when the summer came, they just said, look, the impact of COVID on our own core business has been, we've lost £125 million in our core business.
Wow.
And therefore we can't justify investing any further, and therefore the deal can't go ahead. And then the shareholders of the business decided to close the business. So by September last year, the business was in its shutdown phase, which then meant I'd be out of work essentially, because that was my one and only contract and source of income. So that was quite a shock to myself. That's really the impact of COVID.
Gosh, and that's massive, because then, so say March last year, March 2020, you will have been in quite a relatively comfortable position, I'm guessing, knowing that this investment's coming and that, you know, all your plans are coming to fruition. And then fast forward to September, so probably just 6 months later, you're in a very different position. So that must have been... I was going to say you must have been panicking, but I guess you probably saw it coming to a certain extent as the pandemic was progressing. So you probably started making plans going along. I mean, talk us through how did you kind of react to that? Because, you know, you've obviously got through it because you're here talking to me today. So what was it like for you?
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer in always make sure you've got a plan B. So as soon as the investor said in March, we're going to have to pause the deal till the summer, don't worry, it should be fine. A thing for me anyway is you've got to look at your scenarios. So the question then is, what if it's not fine and what if it has to close? So what you don't want to do is have a car crash and then start to think about plan Bs. It's look ahead and think, is a car crash coming? And therefore, what's my plan B to get out of that before it hits?
So
I'd already started thinking the what if scenarios, what would I do next? And then you start to think about, okay, what are the other contract opportunities that are out there that could benefit? So, you know, networking with people, seeing what's going on, thinking about things like my own skills development. So I knew, because I've been doing this for nearly 5 years, that is there a couple of things I need to brush upon in my own skills if I'm going to try and get another contract elsewhere? Because the world keeps changing and the skills people need keep changing. So is there any investment in skills training I need to do myself before that summer came? And so, yeah, very much looking at plan B, contract scenarios, and anything around skills that might help me with that securing new work as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess then it sounds like it was fairly quick on your part to start looking, because I guess some people, if they were told, we'll come back to it in the summer, some people might take that face value, but it sounds fortuitous that wasn't your perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And also it's a case of, because I actually, by the summer, I was the only employee remaining, because essentially we had to downsize a bit until the investment came. And so in effect, I was then the only member of staff. And it would have been really easy in the summer, as soon as they said, we're not investing, for me to say, well, okay, well, I'm off then. Good luck shutting this down. But I knew that would actually leave them compromised, because to shut down a business actually takes time and effort as well. And even though they couldn't pay me my normal rate, they could pay me a small amount of money to help with the shutdown. So I think the key is morally make sure you don't exit in the wrong way that leaves a negative taste in the mouth of the people you've been working with. So I actually gave them a bit of my time at lower rate to help shut down the business. And then by November, the business was essentially shut down. But interestingly, through my helping them shut down the business, I opened up a new relationship with somebody else that then provided me a contract from December to February. That just finished now. So, and that wouldn't have happened if I decided to leave them in the mix. So yeah, it's interesting sometimes by doing the right thing opens a few more doors that would never have been revealed if you hadn't done the right thing by someone else as well.
Yeah, and that's really good, because, you know, as you say, you could have just walked away and left them to it, and you weren't obligated to kind of stay and do that. But that kind of moral duty is really admirable, and I'm so glad that worked out for you, because that just shows to our listeners that you know, doing the right thing does work out, or at least it did for you, which is really, really good. So tell us a little bit then about that, and about what then cropped up through staying on and closing the business and doing things properly, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah, so what I actually did is, because obviously they lost that investment deal, and the shareholders already decided we're going to shut the business down. And I was basically being paid then to start the shutdown process. But I said, look, why don't I try to find a new investor for you? I know you can't afford me to be paid to do that, but you know, this is a good idea. I'd love to see this business thrive. And they said, yeah, well, if you could do that, then that could be a saving grace. So I actually went out, I actually did find a new investor. I did find, basically start to look at structuring and management buyout structure for the business. But unfortunately, by the time that deal was on the table, and because the business was currently owned by three institutional shareholders, there just wasn't the time left to actually execute on that deal. So therefore, the shareholders still decided to shut down the business. However, the person who was interested in working with me to do a management buyout with their investor, got to see a bit more of me and was really impressed with how I operated, how I put that deal together. And he then became the chief exec of Be The Business, which is a big organization, increasing the productivity of UK businesses. And he came straight back to me saying, there's an opportunity here. We're looking for someone like you for 3 months. And I said, yeah. So, but that just came out of that natural evolution of trying to do the right thing by the business.
That's really good. And I've spoken a few times on different podcast episodes about the power of networking. And actually, that is exactly what you've just demonstrated. So I know people don't like the word networking, and I get that, and it feels a bit cold and salesy, but actually that guy was someone you were working with, and so you might not have been networking in inverted commas, you were just working with him, but that led on to your next thing, which is brilliant.
I mean, this has happened a lot in my career, so, and sometimes people say, David, you're probably the luckiest guy I know, because you always seem to pull a rabbit out of the hat in the 11th hour, but I think it just all comes down to how you've been behaving and how you've acted professionally opens up these kinds of opportunities. So, for example, I was one of the UK's first internet entrepreneurs in the early 90s. through an agency to 40 staff over 10 years, working for global corporations. And I had members of staff in the business that I used to mentor and support, even though I wasn't their line manager. I was always there if they needed help and provided that, that kind of that word in the ear that, that, that helped them with advice. When I left that business to do what I'm then went on to do, Anna left that business as well, went to work for a big global advertising agency. And at a point, actually, I was in crisis. I needed to find a contract quickly about a year later. Interestingly, at the 11th hour of needing that contract, she phoned me up, said somebody had resigned from their advertising agency. They needed a project director that could start tomorrow. The only person I could think of is you. Are you available? And at the same time, I was desperate for a contract. So, and you don't plan for these things. But because of how I treated her when I worked with her, and she knew I was professional, she knew she could vouch for me to her managing director. So I think that's the key. The key is to... I know sometimes we have behavior traits and who we are, but I've always said treat people with respect, even if that you're not their manager, you're not their boss. Just treat people with respect. It's amazing how that can bear fruit in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've kind of struck on something that that I sometimes think about, is whether we are lucky in kind of where our career paths take us, or whether we make our own luck. And you know, I reflect on different things that I've done, and I think, oh, well, was that luck or kind of, or what? And what's your take on that? I mean, it's a bit of a grand question, actually, but
I still think luck is being in the right place at the right time, meeting the right people. But there was a path that took you to be in that right place at the right time. And it has to be strategic. You know, you should always, whether you're working to make money or not, you must have a plan. You must be heading to a horizon for a reason. Therefore, if you're always thinking strategically about what are the choices I need to make now and tomorrow to keep me on that journey. So for me, yes, a lot of things looked like they were lucky, but actually I was still had this inner compass that influenced how I made decisions that took me to that right place at the right time. Yeah. Lucky things are still strategic because they're linked to an overall mission of where you're on as a person. But they always look lucky on the outside, but actually I took a lot of work in networking or did choices you made to get to that point. Because if I made the wrong choices, I wouldn't have been in that point at the right time.
Exactly. So where are things now? So you know, we talked about that kind of business that you were working for and how that's kind of closed at the moment. So what's life like now?
Yeah, well, I think because sometimes when these things happen, I mean, back then I was in the summer last year, I was 48 years old. So the first thing you're thinking about is, oh my God, I'm 48 years old, having to start again. And that can be quite traumatic, you know, thinking about that. But you've got to think about it, deal with it, process it and move on. So yeah, I'm 48, but I've still got a lot to offer. I'm going to still find a way to do something else, which is fine. And actually sometimes things end like that, and rather than seeing the negative of it, it gives you a new opportunity to rethink where you're going and what you're doing. And actually, I remember the dream I had. I actually set up a business in 2015 with a vision to be it's called Tech Centre, and it's to be a tech for good agency. You know, can we use technology to improve society? I created that business with that vision of innovating for good. But because this other business idea came along and they wanted me to be the chief exec after that, I parked it. I actually stopped developing it. I just put it aside.
Okay.
And went on this 5-year journey with this startup technology business. So when the car crash came, it was, okay, I've got over the anxiety now of being 48 years old and I've got to reboot myself. But actually, why not maybe bring back that dream I had in 2015? So I brought back that dream. And then I thought, well, why not spend the next few months whilst I'm shutting down this business? First of all, investing in some training I chose Warwick Business School around innovating and strategy, because I felt I needed to increase my knowledge. So I did I joined a program with Warwick Business School on strategy and innovation. And what I learned, I then went through my own innovation process to think of new products and services from Tech Centre that will have a benefit to society. So 3 months of doing that, I came up with 2 new business ideas. Problem is, I didn't have any money at that point. That got me to November 2020. I needed then some money to develop that further. But then that contract came up for 3 months, which meant I could do the contract. And as the money came in, use some of that money to pay my bills, but then use some of that money to develop the new ideas I had, which then launched in February. So, yeah, it was kind of, I was contracting with purpose, if you like, to actually maybe develop. So sometimes I think, yes, a car crash might happen, but actually it sets you free to do something else. You could actually go on and create another business, or you could just go on to contracting, but it gives you the space to choose and change your destiny, I think, as well.
How come you didn't just decide to go back into employment? I mean, there's kind of all sorts of different roles out there, I guess you could have done, but you took that decision to keep going with another one of your kind of dreams. You took that entrepreneurial route instead, which is really interesting. So what led you to do that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, I mean, interestingly, last year, my wife and I decided to start planning to have a baby, our own.
Oh, well, wonderful.
But when COVID came, we said, look, let's put that back a year. Let's make that 2021. Yeah. So actually, when I got to the summer last year and the car crash came with that business closing down, and knowing that we definitely have a baby this year, essentially, I felt like if I'm going to create another business and give it a go, because it takes a lot of sacrifice of time and money, I probably have one last shot at making this work. Because if we go into, say, summer 2021, and I don't really have anything that's a viable business, my probably only choice then will be to go work for someone else, because I won't be able to take the risk and the sacrifice known as a baby coming in, say, September. And the baby's coming September, by the way.
Very well organised.
If I've got one shot left at setting up a business and growing it, I've probably got 12 months to make it work. Yeah. After that, I don't think I could justify to my wife and myself the risk involved in setting up a business at that point, because having a baby changes the dynamics.
So you've sort of given yourself a year then to make it work. And so I guess that probably focuses your mind. I mean, you know, when you're setting up and running a business, you tend to be very focused anyway. But does that time pressure then kind of add to it?
Yeah, it certainly keeps you focused. But I think it's also a good thing sometimes. I've seen some entrepreneurs literally work themselves half to death believing in what they're doing is going to work. But sometimes, you know what, if I can't make something work within 12 months enough to move it forward, it's probably the right amount of time for me to go and do something else anyway.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you can just go on with something for too long. So I think 12 months is enough time to prove something's a viable business. Otherwise, you definitely need to move on.
And a couple of things you said earlier kind of really resonated with your kind of story and your journey, if you like, was that always having a plan B and ideally a plan C. I'm not going to ask you what your plan C is, because I think you're still on plan B, really. But the other thing that was interesting was you did some upskilling, and that's something that that people don't necessarily always think of, I guess, if they're in that crisis trauma type of mindset perhaps, or feeling at that time. What kind of made you see your way through to that?
So for me, I've always been an innovator. I've always tried to be thinking of new ideas, new ways to help clients and organizations. So for me, it was the world's changed how we use technology, the world's changed how we design organizations. And actually with COVID, technology-wise, organizations are going to transform how they use technology forever. It's accelerated tech adoption. I felt like I didn't know enough about the change. Therefore, investing in a 9-month executive diploma in Warwick Business School on strategy and innovation. And when I looked at the modules, it was like it was designed for me.
Oh, fabulous.
Like, if I saw myself in 12 months, this is what I need to have in my armory of knowledge. And also the knowledge would help me through my own innovation process for the next 12 months. So it's a high cost. These things are not cheap. But I decided it wasn't a cost, it was an investment in myself.
Yeah.
And invested in my own future. So I made that decision. However, actually quite often, you know, some online training courses available are quite low cost. So sometimes it's just a small cost rather than a large cost. It depends what you need.
But
for me, it definitely was a great decision for me as I embarked on this next 12 months journey from September last year.
Yeah, and I guess it also tallies with your plan C that I said I wasn't going to mention, but I guess ultimately your plan C, you did mention, was potentially going back in as an employee and working for someone else. So I guess the investment you've made in your training and development would be useful or applicable in that scenario as well, I would imagine.
Definitely. I'd be able to use the learnings to innovate of a new business idea.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of the teaching is really how you apply the knowledge being an employee in organisations. So yeah, in effect, it means it's not wasted ever, because it will apply wherever I go.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And that's kind of a useful illustration for listeners, if they're not sure whether to invest money, whether it's a large amount or a more modest amount in their training and development, is kind of what are the plans? What's their plan C? And will it be useful for that? And if it will, then hopefully it wouldn't then be a waste of money. And I guess it's all about how you make decisions and that sort of thing. And it's just kind of taking an overview and working out how that fits into your plans. I'm probably stating the obvious there.
No, it's a really good point. And also, I mean, I must be married with my wife, and I think what we've got to do as well when we're going through the dark time is be open and honest with our partners.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can be, hey, everything's okay, hey, everything's fine, don't worry. But actually, them not knowing the detail makes them anxious.
Yeah.
So actually, I've been very truthful with my wife, Sophia, during the whole process from March last year. So when it came to the, will we spend this money on this executive diploma, even though actually that means we're taking that away from something else and our future, Sophia understood why and therefore agreed that I should do it. So I think that's the key as well, is make sure we know who's in our life that needs to know what's going on and make decisions together.
It sounds like you've had quite a big journey then, and, you know, have you come back stronger?
I have, in that obviously it's now April. I launched basically two new business ideas in February. I'm currently testing both with the market. It's now April. I set my deadline as September, if I don't prove that these are viable and can grow, then I need to shut them down and move on to employment. I'm stronger in that. I'm okay with that. I'm stronger in that. Yeah. It's fine. If I have to go on to plan C, that's cool. And also, because plan C may still happen, I'm starting to put the feelers out now, speaking with people and organisations and networking around what opportunities are available for employment. So I'm not waiting until September. I'm already starting to get a sense of, I might need to do this, therefore let's, because it can take 3 months to get hired. I've only got a few months left anyway, so I need to start that process, but still pushing the business ideas. So I don't want to ever think I wasn't successful because I spent time trying to get employed. I have time to do both. Let's make sure I give both 100%.
Well, it sounds a very pragmatic approach, actually. And you're quite right. It can take 3 months easily to kind of get another job. So rather than potentially be in a position of September at panic stations, you know, wanting to make decisions for your next step, it's actually incredibly sensible to have half an eye on plan C while you're going through plan B. So, you know, makes perfect sense to me. We've been chatting for a little bit, so what would be your top tips or your kind of key learnings, if you like, from your experience?
I'd say the top tips are, however good your life is right now, there will always be disruption to you. You will always be shocks. You know, and you look at the history of economics, there's always these shocks and recessions. And so I think the key is, no matter how great life feels, you're going to hit potential car crashes in the future that you have to be able to adapt to. So be mindful of thinking about what's going on in the economy, what's going on in life in general, because it could and probably will happen to you as well. Therefore, how can you better prepare yourself for those shocks? One is, is your skills training. Make sure you're kind of thinking about how you develop yourself as you go. But I think the main one is having mentors and networks. So I have a person, John, and we've been literally speaking every month for 10 years. And we're always sharing what's going on in our lives. And when he hits rock bottom, I'm helping him. When I'm in a bad place, he's helping me. We're helping each other with, hey, have you thought about that work opportunity? What about this? What about that? So I think the key is make sure we're giving to others without anything coming back. I was speaking to a contractor last month who'd been out of work for 6 months. And again, can we make, if we're okay, great, but maybe can you use some of your time to mentor someone that's not okay in this time as well?
Yeah.
So I think that's the, can we connect people together to give help and receive help, I think will be important.
Yeah, I really like that actually, because you never know when you might be in that position of kind of needing that extra bit of support. So it makes such a difference to them, the individual, but also to you in terms of giving your time. So again, another example of doing the right thing, which is a really lovely way to end today's episode. So thank you so much for joining us today. I've really enjoyed talking to you and hearing your survival story. There's so much food for thought in there. So massive thank you.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you for listening to All About Self-Employment, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.